This is Ozarks at Large. Yesterday, we began the program with a story about a nearly 90-year-old piece of artwork recently restored, a mural inside the lobby of the historic Washington County Courthouse. Today, we move from the past to the present and the future.
Be mindful of your surroundings and stay with the group. When we get there, we will walk across a little bit of gravel and then up a little wooden ramp.
A few instructions yesterday morning to invited guests and members of the media as they rode a school bus to the grounds of Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art.
Anybody in a yellow vest or a neon shirt can direct you. After the presentation, we'll board the
Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art isn't ready to open to the public, but yesterday a sneak preview of the museum in progress included a chance to see some of the views that will be available from the finished structure. And also included a few new announcements, including acquisitions of works by a pair of the pillars of the pop art movement. Don Bacigalupi, the executive director of the museum, addressed an audience seated in white folding chairs inside what will eventually be a grand opening space of the museum. He made his announcements as heavy equipment worked behind him.
This is a remarkable portrait painting by the artist Andy Warhol. Many of you know the name Andy Warhol, one of the most important American artists of the 20th century. Warhol, famous for painting celebrities, superstars, and many other themes. Toward the end of his life, he died in 1986. In 1985, he painted this extraordinary portrait of our friend Dolly Parton.
The acquisition of Andy Warhol's 1985 portrait of Dolly Parton with his familiar swatches of vibrant color means the artist perhaps most associated with pop art will be represented in Crystal Bridges. The large painting of the country music icon was done late in Warhol's career, about 2 years before his death. Another recently acquired work represents the early portion of another important artist's work. The sculpture Standing Explosion Red is a rather rare three-dimensional example of Roy Lichtenstein's work. The artist is best known for his use of comic book themes and big dots to create art. Again, Don Bacigalupi, the executive director of Crystal Bridges.
This is an unusual work by Lichtenstein in that he was primarily a painter. Painter, you'll all recognize his paintings inspired by comic strip illustrations. And Lichtenstein had a very long and distinguished career in pop art. He made very few sculptures, and we've acquired one of his very interesting and very lively sculptures. It's called Standing Explosion. It stands about this high, and when you greet it, it is kind of the announcement of pop art. It's a very loud, explosive way to announce the arrival of the pop artist generation, so we're delighted to have it.
The Lichtenstein sculpture, about waist high, looks as if it is a comic balloon that should accompany a punch from a 1960s superhero. Those acquisitions, announced for the first time yesterday, balance the collection toward the present. Another work announced yesterday was painted more than 200 years ago.
You all have to keep this under your hats because we've not even planned to announce this one yet. We only acquired it a couple of weeks ago, but I did want to share it with you. It's one of the earliest works in the collection, a painting from 1808 by Benjamin West called Cupid and Psyche. And as you can see, it's in a very different mode, a very different part of our history, very different subject, Cupid and Psyche, a mythological scene from the early 19th century. Benjamin West, and the reason I wanted to share this with you, especially after showing you Andy Warhol, you might argue, was the most internationally known of American artists in the 20th century. Benjamin West was undoubtedly the most internationally known American artist in the early 19th century. He was probably America's first superstar artist. He was traveling the world. He was, in fact, the first American and only American president of the Royal Academy in London. Imagine that. And he lived both in the United States, born in Pennsylvania, lived in the U.S. as well as in Europe, and painted on both sides of the Atlantic, and in many ways introduced American art to the world stage. And so we're delighted to have this first work by West enter our collection. It's a major work by him, a very important work, and we're thrilled to have it.
Where am I going to come into the complex?
Right here.
Right here.
Right. This is from the parking garage. This is the elevator.
The Warhol-Lichtenstein-West triple announcement surprised and impressed many of the invited guests inside the shell of the in-progress museum. But for some, even more exciting was the chance to explore a few hundred square feet of the structure. Practically every view available allowed a glimpse of the museum under construction, framed by the trees that surround the Crystal Bridges footprint.
This is the courtyard straight down. Just past this, the elevator, that's the courtyard.
And then just to the right.
No dates for the expected completion or opening of the museum were announced yesterday, though the promise of such information coming relatively soon was made. But important elements of two staples of the contemporary museum landscape, the museum restaurant and the museum gift shop, were discussed. And both of those announcements involved familiar local names. Case DeGuerro was named the museum's food and beverage director. The former owner of Soul Restaurant in Fayetteville and food editor of Cityscapes magazine will oversee the development of food and beverage at the museum. The gift shop's interior will be designed by Marlon Blackwell and his firm based in Fayetteville. Blackwell and his firm were selected after a national competition. The architect says he's excited about the different influences he and his staff are incorporating into the design.
Its inspiration comes from influences as diverse as, you know, Faye Jones, Agnes Martin, and our own Leon Niehaus, who you may know is a fantastic basket maker from Huntsville. But we were introduced to his work. His work will be marketed in the museum store, along with a whole host of other local artists. There's a whole area in the store dedicated to local Arkansas artists. What we thought was very important to look at the local craft and the material culture, those materials that are raw and then refined for use. And Arkansas produces a lot of hardwoods. And so, in particular, cherry and walnut will be used throughout the store, the floors, the walls, the ceiling. And it will use the latest technologies, CNC milling. It's a kind of digital computer way of routing material. So we're going to use over 280 cherry plywood ribs to that will hang from the ceiling to create a surface form that's inspired by the underside of a mushroom called a lamella. So it'll be able to filter light as well as air and create a kind of an envelope, let's say, in the store. And all of that, too, will be, our hope is it'll be locally made and manufactured.
Don Bacigalupi says yesterday's string of announcements is an example of the balances Crystal Bridges is trying to make, classical and contemporary, national and local.
We're going to be a very unique museum by virtue of the place, the gorgeous Ozark setting, and bringing together, you know, the best of American art and culture in this very specific place. And so we're availing ourselves of local talent, local craftsmen, local materials in every way we can, and bringing the best to bear on this museum.
And you can see a sideshow of many of the views of the still under construction museum at our website, ozarksatlarge.com. We continue our week-long series of questions and answers from the Peabody Hotel debate last week between Senator Blanche Lincoln and Congressman John Bozeman. Democrat Lincoln is seeking a third term in the Senate, while Republican John Bozeman is asking voters to elect him to the seat. The debate was organized and moderated by Roby Brock of TalkBusiness.net. The question we'll hear on today's edition of Ozarks at Large was one that many of you suggested after I asked what issues you were interested in hearing the candidates address. Congressman Bozeman, you've mentioned in campaign appearances and materials that you think energy independence for the United States is a major issue. What specifically should happen over the next 6 years? What equation would you like to see to have the United States become energy independent?
Well, I'm a T. Boone Pickens guy in the sense that he's big on wind and things like that. That's great. He's also big on natural gas. Again, I think that's a great direction to go. But when you listen to him talk, the primary thing that he tells you is we need to use it all. If it's American, we need to use it in a safe, environmentally friendly way. And we can do that. We're the only country in the world that's not using the natural resources that we were blessed with. And this is the reason that we're sending hundreds of billions of dollars overseas to people that don't like us. So it's a national security issue. It would dramatically help our economy. So again, I believe that we need to use all of our energy resources in an environmentally friendly way. I also think that we need a lot more nuclear power in this country. France is 85% nuclear in that regard. And so that's something we need to look at. With the new nuclear type of technology, you can actually reconstitute the fuel. We've got people that have spent their entire working career on board a nuclear-powered submarine or aircraft carrier with the unit as close as from here to there. Again, this is very, very safe. So that's what we need to look at is being in a position that if it's American, we need to use geothermal, whatever. We need to get rid of our dependence on foreign oil, and that's how you do it.
Senator Lincoln? Well, I think it's also a key component of our economy. I think we have to move from an old energy economy to a new energy economy if we want to create good green jobs, and I think we do. If we want to be a player in the global economy, we also need to make sure that we're doing that, because lessening our dependence on foreign oil is essential, both to our economy and to our national security. I think we do have a responsibility, too, to clean up our environment. And I think there are great opportunities for us in Arkansas. We can set the stage, and we've done it in the past. If you look at how Arkansas has designed its energy needs, it's designed it in a very diverse way, whether it's solar or wind, which are small parts of what we have now. But more importantly, if you look at nuclear, you look at hydro, you look at natural gas, we're sitting on enough natural gas in this state that has bolstered our economy already to be a tremendous resource for energy. It's 50% less the carbon emission that coal-fired is. But we also have great ingenuity in South Arkansas. I've been working with scientists down there that are looking at algae as an opportunity not to be a fuel, but also to be a digester to putting on the stacks of coal-fired energy plants. There's great opportunity there. We've got great incentives to do it, whether it's safety and national security, whether it's clean energy and a clean environment, or whether it's just job creation. Those are great opportunities, and I think they're all important. Domestic production is absolutely essential, and what we have here in this state we should be proud of, and we should continue to advance it.
Congressman Bozeman, would you like to add anything to your
The only thing I would add is the one thing that we don't need to do is institute the cap-and-trade tax, the cap-and-trade bill, which Senator Lincoln has co-sponsored twice. That would devastate the energy industry in Arkansas. For every green job that's created, three energy jobs would be lost. Now, don't ask me. Go to southern Arkansas. Ask your producers. Ask the people that run the refineries down there. Again, that would devastate Arkansas as far as its energy production, not only Arkansas, but the country as a whole. That would make us more dependent on foreign oil than anything else we could do. So I'm adamantly opposed to that. I'm also opposed to it because it would double your utilities. Imagine what that does to single moms. Imagine what that does to people on fixed incomes. Add $1 a gallon at least to the price of gasoline. So again, that's a path that we don't need to go down. I voted against it.
Senator Lincoln, final rebuttal.
Well, I think that's a good example of where I've spent a little bit of time in the timeout chair in my caucus, because I did oppose cap and trade as it came out of the House and out of the Senate committees. I did believe it picked winners and losers, and I don't think it moves us forward in terms of the objectives that we want to see, taking into consideration what it does in terms of the cost to low income, as well as what it costs our farmers and agriculture. So I didn't support the cap and trade that came out of the House or the Senate committees, and I'm certainly going to make sure that I don't support any of those that are not beneficial to Arkansas.
The major party candidates seeking the U.S. Senate seat in Arkansas in November, Blanche Lincoln and John Bozeman, sat across a table from each other inside the Peabody Hotel in Little Rock last Friday. Tomorrow, one more session from that debate. It was moderated and largely organized by Roby Brock from TalkBusiness.net and the publisher of the magazine Talk Business Quarterly. Support for Roby Brock's coverage of Arkansas business and politics is provided by Hendricks College, a residential undergraduate liberal arts college. Learn more at hendricks.edu/odyssey. And the Little Rock National Airport at fly-lit.com, where travelers can book air, car, and hotel reservations online, track flights, and check the weather. Mobile phone access is also available at fly-lit.com/mobile. And Bank of the Ozarks, offering the tools and services to make Arkansas businesses work. More information is available at bankozarks.com. This is Ozarks at Large. We're smack dab in the middle of September, and inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Jody Badoska, who is Vice President of Communications for Walton Arts Center. Hi, Jody. You've got the Blue Men on their way. Where did they go to next?
Dallas. They should be loading in Dallas this week. They'll probably have had their first couple of performances right now. But we were glad, you know, we were so glad they were here, and we had so much fun with them. It was kind of sad to see them go. I think what will be interesting for them on their next stop on the tour is they've been here at the Arts Center for 4 or 5 weeks, so they got comfortable with our space, and now they have to take Blue Man Group and put it on a truck and load it into lots of other places. And so we wish them all the best of luck with that, because we had just such a great time with them, and I think their tour is going to be smashing. So,
well, if the Blue Men are in our rearview mirror, What are we looking ahead?
We're looking ahead at a lot of a really great variety of acts coming up over the next couple of weeks. We don't have another Broadway show for, you know, till the mid to late October. But in the meantime, we've got all these great different genres going on. So we've got B.B. King, of course, on the 23rd of September, which is sold out right now. But, you know, you can always call in and get on the notification list to find out if tickets come available. Then we have a concert with Amy Grant on the 7th of October. That's a concert partnered with the Salvation Army. Mm-hmm. On the 8th and the 9th of October, we're very busy. We have Tierney Sutton in Starlight Theater. That's another jazz act. We will have the first show in our 10x10 music series, which is the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. The good thing about that is that prior to the show, we'll have a creative conversation with members of the company, and also Peter Lane, our president and CEO, will lead that creative conversation about the Lincoln Center Chamber Orchestra and how it works and the music we're going to hear that night. And
exciting.
So that's going to be fun. That'll be a free event. We don't know yet where that's going to be, but it will be prior to the show, which is at 8 o'clock. And then we have on the 9th, Omara Portuandu, the Cuban singer, who is also on our 10x10 series.
And 10x10 again means that these tickets, most of the tickets are $10, some are $25. But you can get in to these shows for $10.
Absolutely. And you can get great seats for that low price. And the best part about it, honestly, is by buying that ticket, you get access to all of these great things like the pre-show conversations. We've got a new 10x10 blog that we update every couple of days with some background and really fun information about the artists. We're going to have a post-show 10x10 cafe where you can come out after the show and mingle and grab a drink and talk to people, and hopefully the artists will come out as well. And we're just really looking to make those 10x10 concerts a very fun, accessible evening. So whether you're familiar with chamber music or Cuban music isn't really the point. We want you to come out and have a good time with your friends and be part of a new experience for you. So I think that's going to be great. And then, of course, we have Chris Isaak, which everybody is very excited about, on the 12th of October. And one of the questions I've been getting about Chris Isaak, which I actually had to go look it up, so I'm going to give everybody a little trivia. If anybody asks you who the model is in his very famous music video that everybody loves.
On the beach. Not much clothing between them. Yes.
Her name, for the trivia buffs out there, is Helena Christensen. So now you know something new and different about the Chris Isaak video. Everybody was asking me about that, and so I figured I had to figure out who that lovely lady was. And then the last thing I want to talk about is The Color Purple. It's the next show on our Broadway season, and you and I were just talking about it, about how it's, The Color Purple for me is a book that I read when I was in high school. I had to read it, and so it's been part of my upbringing. So when I heard that The Color Purple was coming, I was pretty psyched. But we'd love to get some people to come to see it because, you know, I think there might be a little bit of fear that it's not a happy story. It's not a, you know, sort of an uplifting experience. And I wanted to, you know, just tell everybody that I saw it in New York. And I have never come out of a show feeling as inspired as I did after that show. It was a very... I hesitate to use this word, but I think this is the best way to describe it. It was a very spiritual experience because it's an affirming show. You do see the darkness of some of the themes from the book, but the music is amazingly energetic. The costumes are incredible.
And it is a musical.
It is a musical, and it's a journey. This, you know, Celie takes a journey through some very, very dark times, but she comes out on the other end with a really positive, really strong message.
Appropriate age to take someone?
I would say that this is not the one for the little kids. Mm-hmm. You know, this one, I would say if you have teenagers, this is a good show. Probably much younger than that, it probably will go over their heads, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But the music is great. And so if you have teenagers who are into music, this is a good one because it goes through all kinds of different genres. There's some gospel, there's some jazz, there's some juke joint stuff. There's traditional Broadway show tunes. You know, it's great. A lot of fun.
And this run starts in October.
This one starts on October 19th And it's a full week Broadway run, and it runs through the 24th, I believe.
And you don't have to subscribe to anything. There are single tickets where you can come in just for this performance.
That's correct.
Performance.
And you should also give our box office a call, because we have a lot of special family packs and student discounts for this show. So call up the box office or check our website, waltonartscenter.org, and the box office will help you. So if there's, you know, people have a need for a discount or a special deal for their family, it's probably out there for them for this show.
WaltonArtsCenter.org.
Or 443-5600 for tickets.
Jody, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Kyle.
This is Ozarks at Large. Plenty of chances to see sports in the KUAF listening area over the next 4 days, beginning tonight with the Northwest Arkansas Naturals and their last home game of the 2010 season. It's game two of the Texas League Championships. Last night in Springdale, the Naturals won game one of the best of five series, defeating the Midland Rockhounds 7-2. Game two tonight at 7 at Arvest Ballpark, weather permitting, in Springdale. The University of Arkansas soccer Razorbacks are at home tomorrow night against St. Mary's. That match scheduled to begin at 7 at Razorback Field on the U of A campus. It's the first home match for the Razorbacks since completing a 5-match road trip earlier this month. The University of Arkansas volleyball team will open SEC play Friday night in Fayetteville at home against Georgia in Barnhill Arena. That, too, scheduled to begin at 7. The volleyball team will also play at home Sunday afternoon at 1:30 against Auburn. By the way, the volleyball team from the University of Arkansas Fort Smith on the road for their next two matches, one tonight and another on Saturday. Both John Brown University soccer teams will play away from home this weekend, but the University of Ozarks women's soccer team hosts Louisiana College this afternoon, beginning at 2 in Clarksville. The University of Ozarks men's soccer team will play today at 4 against Louisiana College, that too in Clarksville. And both Ozarks soccer teams will host Mississippi College Sunday afternoon, again at 2 and 4.
Blues musician B.B. King was born on this date in 1925 in Mississippi. The singer and guitarist was born into a sharecropping family. Following his service in the U.S. Army, he began his career as a disc jockey in Memphis, Tennessee, where he was dubbed the Beale Street Blues Boy. That nickname was soon shortened to B.B. King made his first recording in 1949, and the next year began a 12-year-long association with Kent RPM Modern, for which he recorded a string of rhythm and blues hits. He also toured the nightclub circuit continuously, averaging over 300 shows annually for more than 30 years. His style of music earned him the title King of the Blues. In 1962, he signed with ABC Records, which released Live at the Regal, a benchmark blues concert album. In 1969, he released his biggest hit single, The Thrill Is Gone. King was the first bluesman to tour the Soviet Union in 1979, and by this time he had also become the first bluesman to enter the pop mainstream, making regular appearances in Las Vegas, Nevada, and on network television. King also found commercial success with the many collaborations he's made over the years with various artists. In 1987, he was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Still performing into his 80s, King won his 14th Grammy Award in 2006 and embarked on a sellout international tour. That same year, he received the Presidential Medal of Freedom. In 2008, the B.B. King Museum and Delta Interpretive Center opened in Indianola, Mississippi. The museum is dedicated to King's music, the music which influenced him, and the history of the Delta area. King is scheduled to perform at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville, September 23rd. Gunnery Sergeant Carlos Hathcock's second tour in Vietnam abruptly ended when he was riding in an assault vehicle that struck a 500-pound mine near a South Vietnamese village on this date in 1969. Despite being covered with flaming gasoline that burned him almost beyond recognition, the Arkansan returned to the vehicle and rescued seven Marines. He refused a recommendation for a Medal of Honor for this heroic act, but was awarded a belated Silver Star in 1996. After recovering from the burns, he served for another 10 years, training U.S. Marine Corps snipers until his forced medical retirement in 1979. Hathcock is believed to have attained the highest number of recorded kills in the history of the Marine Corps.
He is ready for the 2-2 to Woodson, and here it comes. And it is swung on and missed. And Tom Browning has pitched a perfect game.
On this date in 1988, Tom Browning of the Cincinnati Reds pitched a perfect game in a 1-0 victory over the Los Angeles Dodgers. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
It's Thursday, September 16th, 2010. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Becca Beckin-Martin. She is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
I just realized that I have dropped the argument with you, and I need to pick it back up.
What argument?
2010.
As opposed to 2010?
Uh-huh. You didn't say 1,965.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
But I think when we get into the teens, I think I'll say 2013. Until then, I'll probably stay with 2000.
All right.
Neither is incorrect.
I just realized that I had dropped an argument with you, and that's against my nature. So moving on, tonight, mm-hmm. Chefs in the Garden.
Yes, at the Botanical Gardens.
Food from local restaurants, music by Ultra Suede, 6 to 8:30 tonight. Tickets are $35 to $45. And you can call 750-2620.
Absolutely.
It's a big night. Susan Werner, contemporary mm-hmm. folk artist, is in concert two shows tonight at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. 7 o'clock or 9 o'clock. Tickets start at $16. 443-5600. Tonight, The 39 Steps, Theater Squared's smash hit.
They've extended the run.
Never before in their history. We're all so excited. 7:30 at the Nadine Baum Studios in Fayetteville. Tickets are $24. And for something a little bit different,
mm-hmm.
Brett Michaels.
From the rock band Poison.
He's now a solo artist. He's a reality television star. And he's at the Arkansas Music Pavilion tonight for an 8 o'clock show. And tickets start at $25.
And did he not win the celebrity Donald Trump show? What is that?
The Apprentice?
Yeah, wasn't he the Celebrity Apprentice winner?
I don't know.
I think he was.
All I know about Brett Michaels is my 91-year-old mama loves Poison.
Well, there you go.
Go figure.
There you go. That's all happening tonight.
Yes.
And tomorrow, a new edition of What's Up in the newspaper.
Yes, with so many more things.
Becca Beckin-Martin is editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is P.J. Hrabowski, music director at KUAF, host of Film Score Friday, which airs tomorrow from 10 until noon on KUAF. Welcome back.
Thank you, Kyle.
What movie are we spotlighting today?
Today, it's the 1938 version of Adventures of Robin Hood.
Errol Flynn.
Oh, yes. Errol Flynn, Olivia de Havilland. I mean, it's a wonderful movie, and there are a lot of wonderful things came after the movie, because of the movie, okay?
When I think of swashbuckling and that era of swashbuckler movie, this is the one I go to.
Oh, yeah.
It's brilliant Technicolor. It's Errol Flynn at his...
at his best.
Most heroic.
It is his best, yeah. Warner Brothers gave the movie a budget of $1,600,000, which was the largest sum.
Yeah, that's significant in 1938-39.
Most money they ever put toward a film... that Warner did anyway until then. And as a matter of fact, it eventually reached $2 million, which was big in 1938. Now, the movie had great dialogue, wonderful performances, excellent casting. Mm-hmm. Flynn had already been seen, as you said, as a swashbuckler. He was handsome. He was 29 years old and was considered at the peak of his performance role. Now, he was called, as you were talking about hero, they were calling him hero personified. And Olivia de Havilland was his ideal screen romantic interest. She had already been paired with Flynn in Captain Blood in 1935 and Charge of the Light Brigade in 1936. when you think about film scores, this is just an amazing film score, and we're going to talk about that, of course. But the fact that you saw this movie, you heard this music, and I mean, the music really did it for this movie, and you walk out of there and go, wow, what a great movie, and the music was so good, and I better go back to the movie so I can hear the music again, because, you know, you couldn't buy a recording, you couldn't rent the movie, and so what did you do? The movie went away, and that was it. Now, it was re-released 10 years later, and it was sold-out performances again, you know, 10 years later, which is pretty cool. From the cinematic viewpoint, the careers of Max Steiner, Franz Waxman, and Eric Wolfgang Korngold seemed to have parallels in the fact that all these guys had all moved to Hollywood from a traditional classical music education in Europe. Now, out of the group, though, Korngold was by far the most promising classical composer. His dad, Julius, was a music critic in Vienna. That's like being here, a music critic in New York City. Mm-hmm. And Eric was a child prodigy. He was impressing folks like Gustav Mahler, Richard Strauss, Giacomo Puccini, and this is when he was 9 years old with his compositions. I know, what were we doing when we were nine?
I was watching Robin Hood with Errol Flynn.
Exactly. By the time he reached his 30s, he was firmly on the map as a classical composer of note, with a good number of operas in the Wagnerian style. And Korngold himself was a professor at the Vienna State Academy of Music. I want you to do me a favor. If you can run out and get The Adventures of Robin Hood, the film score, you're going to be holding one of the landmarks of film scoring. It's beautifully recorded in its complete form for the first time with conductor William Stromberg, film musicologist John Morgan, and the Moscow Symphony Orchestra. Now, this is another one of these scores that, you know, the score went away. This Mr. Morgan took the music and sat there and wrote it all, orchestrated again, note for note.
And a reason that these scores from movies in the 30s and 40s went away was because they just weren't seen as important.
No, exactly.
Even though you had someone like Korngold
right.
doing it, it was just seen, this was one little element of the movie. And there just didn't seem to be musical history there.
Right. A lot of them were just lost or misplaced. Sometimes they were donated to universities and things. Sometimes they didn't want to release them. And so some of these people had to just go through and reorchestrate it note for note, which I just think is amazing. You might be asking yourself about this score and what makes it so worthy of these accolades. You might even wonder why a modern film score or why modern film score fans wouldn't be turned off by an antiquated symphonic score. Well,
you're about to tell us.
Exactly. I'll begin by saying that action-adventure scores of John Williams, from Star Wars to Indiana Jones, or Howard Shore's Lord of the Rings, would be totally different if Eric Korngold had never scored a movie or had never scored The Adventures of Robin Hood. Now, as I mentioned a few moments ago, Korngold had composed quite a few operas while he was living in Vienna, and he tended to treat each film as an opera without singing. So he gave each character his or her own leitmotif and then played the various themes against each other, at the same time combining them into this very romantic texture. Let's listen to the cue Love Scene. It could actually be the most beautiful cue on the CD, and a lot of movie and music critics say probably the most beautiful love scene music of any movie. You could go from all the action and adventure of the score from the earlier scenes to this scene, which had these beautiful strings and lush melody. The brass was used for color instead of emphasis, which kind of mirrors Robin and Marion's emotional state. My favorite ones is called The Fish, and it's exactly what you'd expect. The scene opens with a fish that has been caught on Robin Hood's line as he sleeps with his fishing pole dangling in the water.
Right.
Korngold won his second Oscar for this score. Now, that win was very small when you compare it to the fact that he created a score that set the pattern for symphonic scoring for years to come. The music was perfectly married to the on-screen action, and this achievement, Kyle, has rarely been matched.
Well, and I'm glad you brought up that he won the Oscar, because as you were talking, I was wondering, well, did he, in his time, did his contemporaries realize what he produced? And apparently they did.
Yes. Yes, they did. And I think if you asked any film score critic worth their salt what they thought of The Adventures of Robin Hood, they'd probably, you know, bow down to the music of Korngold, because it's just an incredible score. And today, it's still great.
Tomorrow is Film Score Friday from 10 until noon.
What else? We'll hear music from The Piano, Far and Away, A Patch of Blue, Saving Private Ryan, Strangers on a Train, The Disappearance of Garcia Lorca, and Emma.
Sounds like a great show tomorrow beginning at 10 on KUAF. PJ Hrabowski, as always, thanks.
Thanks, Kyle.
Korngold's score triumphed when first heard in 1938 and continues to hold up splendidly. Singer, musician, and songwriter Susan Werner has an ability to create timeless music as well, and she manages to do it consistently from any number of different musical angles. Her 2004 CD, I Can't Be New, features 13 of her own songs in the style of the Great American Songbook and Cole Porter. In 2007, she released the CD The Gospel Truth, songs injected with traditional gospel, but asking questions of religion and God. Her latest CD is titled Classics and matches songs written by others, but with styles of great composers. So Paul Simon's song A Hazy Shade of Winter collects influences from Vivaldi.
Time, 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 see what's become of me. While I looked around for my possibilities, I was so hard to believe. But look around.
Tonight, Susan Werner will perform two shows at Walton Arts Center at 7 and at 9. This week, she talked to me about her music and explained how, with so many different songs, so many different styles, she decides what she'll play at a show like the two she'll give tonight.
I guess I set out about 20 songs like safety cones, and then steer around them or move them around as the mood strikes me. And it depends on from town to town. It depends on night of the week. It depends on the weather. It depends on the humidity. It depends on a number of things. But I think part of what makes my shows enjoyable, from what I hear from other people anyway, is that no two shows are alike, and that tonight's show is about what's happening today, what happened in the news today, what happened yesterday, what state are we in, what town are we in, what just happened here. And every town has its own unique, strange thing that just happened. And part of the fun of being a performer is to mention that thing and then let the audience have its say about it. And the audience, whether it's, you know, whether it's 50 people or 500, the audience is a whole bunch of smarts against just the performer, right? So I hold it out there. I'll mention something that happened recently, and then everybody will have something to say about it, and we'll wind up going somewhere that no one knew we were going to start. We're going to wind up at. It's a little bit like a town hall meeting with music attached. Maybe that's one way of looking at it.
And so one thing that people can take away is, okay, this is the show I saw in Fayetteville, and it's not going to be the same if you go to Houston or East Lansing or Calgary.
No, because I like to enjoy where I am. I think it's what allows me to do 120 concerts a year. I like to be in a new place and to experience where it is I am today and what I just saw driving here, what I got to see when I took my walk this morning. I often like to get to a town a day in advance, and Fayetteville now, I've been there twice, and I like that Nightbird Books store down there. Mm-hmm. I love that place. I spent 3 hours there last time and walked out with a couple books, and There's that one leather store down there on the main strip. This guy, like, makes belts and shoes. And, I mean, just walking in there, the smell of that place is fantastic. I love it. And this guy will punch the holes in this belt he just made for you. And it's him. It's his dog is laying there on the floor. I like anything like that. I want to be where I am. And guaranteed 99% of the people who are in that room for the haul have also been there. And then they'll talk about it.
Well, it's interesting you say that because especially the songs on the latest CD, Classics, feel like you really want to be with them. I think some people might pick this up if they don't know who you are and look at the back and say, now what, Cat Stevens with Bach, and think instantly, well, that's shtick. And that's the farthest, you know? I mean, but it's the farthest thing away from shtick. I mean,
it's not shtick at all.
Right.
It's just, hopefully it's just good music, and you set these things next to each other and people hear a relationship that they didn't expect to hear. I do a version of Marvin Gaye's Mercy, Mercy Me, which is as contemporary as can be, even though it was written in 1972 because of the big Gulf oil spill this summer.
Whoa, oh, mercy, mercy me. Things ain't what they used to be. Where did all the blue skies go? Poison is the wind that blows from the north and south and east. Oh, mercy, mercy me. Oh, things ain't what they used to be. No, no. Oil wasted on the ocean and upon our seas. Fish full of mercury. Oh, 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 mercy, mercy me.
As it turns out, the songs that endure continue to speak in a new way and make us and give us something to think about right now, even though they may have come from 30 years ago, or even in the case of some of the quotes like Vivaldi, 300 years ago.
I love Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood.
Uh-huh.
That's beautiful.
Well, it's a beautiful song. It was written originally as a ballad for Nina Simone, the great jazz singer. And most people don't know that. They just know the Animals version. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. But when you learn that it was a ballad for Nina, you think twice about the song and think about who is talking to who.
Baby, do you understand me now? Sometimes I feel a little mad. But don't you know that no one alive can always be an angel? And when things go wrong, it's me who's bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
The great thing about the CD Classics and what I... You know, you hear from time to time people record a new version of a song and it's almost note for note the same and you wonder, well, why did you do that?
Yeah.
Whereas these songs... It's like meeting an old friend, but they've completely changed, or there's more depth to them, or something. I'm not quite sure how to put it into words.
Well, thanks for saying that we took some risks with it. We certainly did, and one big risk is to do all of the tunes with chamber music instruments. If you hear the recording, you'll hear some with string quartet and with English horn and oboe and French horn. And if you take rock songs and move them away from the guitar and the drums, already you've done something unusual. And what it does, first and foremost, is move the words forward so you pay attention to the lyrics in a new way. And some of these songs, the lyrics are so lovely, like Stevie Wonder's All Is Fair in Love, Love's a Crazy Game, Two People Vow to Stay in Love as One They Say. I mean, it's a torch song. People may know it as a pop song from one of Stevie Wonder's early records, but, ooh, it's a torch song and even French. And as I was listening to it, I thought, oh, it sounds like a Chopin nocturne. I got out a book of Chopin nocturnes and started going through, and I'm like, ooh, I found one. Let's put this on the end and see what happens. And these two things, Stevie Wonder's song and this Chopin nocturne, seem to have something to say to each other. And those discoveries are really what made the whole project worthwhile.
Do you feel compelled to write? Are you always writing or considering writing or percolating?
Yeah, there's usually some little something I'm toying with. But the best songs come about, really you're not looking for them. They just sort of show up in the back quarter panel of your head. And then they just keep tapping on your shoulder like, hey, you should do this. And they just follow you around like a stray dog that you wind up taking home, and then you have to do something about it.
Two shows at Walton Art Center, and that will happen after a day of perhaps, you know, strolling around Dixon Street, Nightbird Books, and getting maybe a new belt.
Oh, yeah, and getting a new belt. And there's that one coffee shop I go into that has, like, this big vat of iced tea right where you come in. It's little. It's sort of about, it's not too far from Nightbird Books. Well, I know where I'm going. I just can't remember the name of it. But there's this little cafe I like, and I'm going to go in there as soon as I get to town and get my lunch in there. And then I'll go to Nightbird Books because I got a good book there last time. I had good luck there. And then I'll see everybody at the Walton Art Center, which is right downtown. I was there in February with Keb Moe. That was great fun. And what a great audience. I mean, people are excited for good music to come to town. I look forward to seeing people on Thursday.
Susan, thank you so much for your time. We look forward to the performances.
Kyle, thank you so much.
Susan Werner performs twice tonight at Walton Art Center in the Star Theater. The first show is at 7, the second at 9. Her latest CD is titled Classics. You can learn more about her at SusanWerner.com and more about tonight's performances at WaltonArtCenter.org. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, OARC, a listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. KUAF has proudly served as your source for NPR programming for the past 25 years. Remember, you can listen for free at our website, KUAF.com. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great Thursday.